forehead, and unbeknownst to them, I was standing 5 feet away, watching the whole thing and having a moment.
For some reason, I latched onto that soundbite. I don't know why. I'd had boys say cute things to me before, but that couple just seemed so mature. She seemed so adult in her self-diagnosed hysteria, and he was so assertive, reassuring, and in control. I carried that snippet with me through high school, college, and into my 20s. I decided that one day my perfect guy would say that to me, and it would be so, so special. Well, he finally did. Kind of. Except he didn't turn out to be my perfect guy. I was 31, and he was my boyfriend of a few months. We were inside a very well-lit Hollywood 7-Eleven, and in a chemically-induced amorous fog, I decided to try and make that one high school memory happen in real life. Feigning being frazzled and tapping into my already natural wellspring of annoyance toward most things, I declared, "Oh my God, ugh, I'm such a mess." And he responded, "You're not a mess." He said it. He actually said it. Fairy tales do come true. Then, noticing I was holding 3 different bags of Mexican cookies, he noted, "You're just a monster." Then he tickled me. I got annoyed and accidentally farted. It was nothing like I had hoped for. See, nothing is perfect. Not even the perfect moments we dream up like that one. If the universe can't manage to create perfect moments, then how are women, in all of our mortal complexities, supposed to be perfect, look perfect, or have perfect relationships? The simple truth is, our obsession with perfection isn't just about what we expect from men. It's about what we expect from ourselves. Everyone knows nearly every model in every ad campaign is photoshopped, but that doesn't stop us from secretly thinking, if only we looked like them, then our lives would be perfect. The rational knowledge that those ads are fake, that in day-to-day life no one looks like a model all the time, doesn't stop our girl logic from whispering, maybe I too can effortlessly wear a vintage football jersey and have it skim my privates while I flit around a Super Bowl party laughing, unspilled cocktail in hand. All this model-worshipping nonsense has triggered an epidemic of body image issues. Intellectually, we know that whatever flaws we're obsessively harping on, chances are males don't notice. 8% of men are colorblind, for God's sake. There's no way they're noticing your thighs. And although women may never truly appreciate this fact, our bodies aren't ugly. Muffin tops, stretch marks, cellulite. It's all normal. I'm going to admit this. I'm disappointed every time I look in a full-length mirror and I don't see a model looking back at me. Somehow my time away from the mirror allowed me just enough momentum to concoct a new fantasy about what might be there later. Then, when I look again and don't see mile-high legs and a perfectly symmetrical face, I'm shocked. Huh? That's not what I expected! I also expect to always look as good as I feel, which is impossible because I might feel fine about last night, but my face and under-eye circles weave a very different tale. Moscow mules, dry skin, and party goblins. I'm also shocked when a man doesn't give me a second glance. Not because I think I'm a supermodel, we've already established the deal on that, but because movies have taught us that if you're the star of the film, aka your own life, then that perfect guy will notice you, no matter what. It's the reason single girls get dressed up to go to the grocery store. We all, deep down, like to think that our light shines so bright that some sexy, sweet stranger will see through all the cracks in the surface and call us on stage at a One Direction concert. What? Not One Direction. It's not a band anymore? My producer's telling me it's not. What's left? The Chainsmokers? Are the Wallflowers touring? Okay, whatever. A cool band. Never mind. We all like to think we're attractive enough that a cute guy will suddenly walk over and say something charming like, "Excuse me, I couldn't help but notice the bright beaming glory of your soul shining through." And then you can be like, "Awesome, is that a Wilson's leather jacket?" But part of us always fears our inner light is about to burn out. This can be blamed partly on biology. Women have a finite amount of time to have children, and many women happen to want them, or think they want them, or at least want to leave open the possibility of wanting them somewhere down the line. And why wouldn't they? Getting married and having kids is held up as the ultimate climax perfecto moment of womanhood from pretty much the moment we're born. But the clock is ticking on these future children, which means we have less time to date and even less time to go through that murky period where you just give hand jobs and refuse to keep the lights on during sex. It feels like, after 21, you have about a week to figure out the narrative of your life, find a partner, and decide when and with whom you'll be making babies if you choose to make them. Now, obviously, I've exaggerated that timeline, because it's more like 3 days. Kidding. But This idea of a fertility shelf life creates a feeding frenzy as we get older and causes standards to drop ever lower in the dating department. When your girl logic starts descending into panic mode, it tells us that if we don't act now, we might end up past our prime and miss our window on love or kids. Girl logic whispers in our ear, just pick someone already. Grab the next normal-looking carbon-based being who talks about wanting a family. But here's the fantasy I subscribe to. The window never truly closes on happiness. Even if your ideal life always included being a mom, that doesn't mean your life will become a meaningless void of despair if for some reason you don't end up having kids. Maybe you'll adopt. Maybe you'll foster. Maybe you'll become a tutor. Maybe you'll open an animal sanctuary or babysit a lot or realize you actually hated children after all. Whoops. Then maybe you get a plant. You can always find new paths to fulfillment. Easier said than done, I'm sure. But there can't just be one kind of happiness for everyone. And in those situations, even though I know girl logic is trying to push me toward what it thinks I need, I have to step back and calmly tell it to calm the fuck down and leave me alone. You can't force time or fate or whatever. Meditation can also be handy, if you're into that, from what I've heard. I don't know. I was busy. In my 20s, I remember hearing 35-year-old dinosaurs talk about dating. They would jokingly say terrible things like, ugh, I just want him to have a job and know how to make a dinner reservation. And I would think, ew, how lame are those women? Now, in my 30s, I'm saying the exact same thing. It isn't that my standards dropped, it's that my expectations are lower because I know through painfully lived experience that quality men get taken quickly. Because men don't have that biological clock endlessly ticking louder and louder, telltale heart style. There isn't always the same urgency to make it work with random women. As a no longer 20-something woman trying to find the right man, sometimes you need a real push-comes-to-shove moment in order to stand up for yourself and tap into the part of your girl logic that innately knows and wants what's best for you. Here's my moment. I matched with someone on a dating app, and he asked me out. His profile on the app was fine. He was Jewish and normal-looking, you know, the kind of normal where if he'd had a stellar personality, then everything could have been incredible. So we went for a drink. I had refused to give him my number, justifying that if we could make a plan via the dating app and it worked out, then I would give this stranger my number. I should have bailed 5 minutes late when he walked in mildly sweaty from walking over from his office. Letting the woman know that you made the date as convenient for yourself as possible isn't exactly a turn-on, right? But hey, desperate times call for desperate dates. We talked for about an hour. Things were going well, which on the gradient scale of dating translates this way. This is going great. You're laughing and making googly eyes at each other. You have the same interests and passions. You think you might already love him. He's even moved to sit next to you instead of across from you in the booth. In your head, you've already paired your first name with his last name. His last name is something horrible like Goblatron, but you don't care. You'll just be Eliza Schlesinger Goblatron and have telemarketers forever dread having to pronounce your last name. Oh my God, did our pinkies just touch? This is going well. One of you is laughing more than the other, but you're having interesting conversation. You aren't overly irritated by anything he's saying. Maybe he keeps messing up his grammar, saying things like could have went, but you write it off as some sort of colloquial affectation and maybe even envision that his rough around the edges demeanor could complement your refinement. This is going fine. One of you keeps saying dumb things, and the other is trying to be polite. Nothing egregious has happened yet to make you leave. Maybe you notice he's wearing those square-toed Kenneth Cole reaction shoes from like 10 years ago, but he's cute enough. This is Sparta! He has said something heinous about an ex, or children, or animals, or why Jews run the media. Maybe he even dared to utter something insane like, I don't get why people choose to be gay. And now there's a fight, and you're 2 seconds away from sternum kicking him into a ditch! So yeah, again. Our date was going somewhere between well and fine. I'd finished my drink and was pondering a second one when this exchange transpired. Me. So, do you have any pets? Dude.
Well, I had a dog.
Aw, did he die?
No, I sort of lost him in a breakup.
Oh, that's terrible. How long ago?
A year.
Oh, wow, you were together for a while?
9 years.
Shot in the dark. 9 years. Were you married?
Yeah, we were.
Uh-huh. Another shot in the dark. Do you have kids?
Yeah, I have 2. They're 6 and 9.
Now, If someone is divorced, in my book, that's not a reason to write him off. No, I like to write off men for concrete flaws like yawning weird, holding a fork the wrong way, or saying porridge. But the fact is, I don't want to date a man with kids at this stage in my life. I like children fine. I'm sure I will love my own someday. But they add a layer of complication to a relationship that I'd just rather not deal with. Some women in my shoes might have opted to stick around and have that second drink. Their girl logic might have kicked in and insisted they hold on to a shred of hope, as in, hey, you never know, maybe I'll fall in love with this 6 out of 10 and his adorable kiddos, and at 33 I can totally put my dreams aside to become a stepmom and be mildly resented by his children and hated by his wife, who for sure is only a few years older than me. My girl logic, on the contrary, went in the opposite direction. I immediately scanned through all the other things I could have done that night. This was my first night off in weeks. I did my makeup. I even contoured. I took an Uber and wasted over an hour of my time with someone who wasn't even viable for me. Something I could have known before we'd even met if he'd bothered to tell me. Tomorrow, I would be back on set. Tonight could have been the start to something important or fun or silly, and I'm trying to find a boyfriend and this guy is in the way, and I flat iron my hair for this, which is a nightmare in and of itself because my hair breaks easily. Oh my God, all my hair is gonna break off, and when I finally meet someone I like, I will just have a head of broken blood pickup sticks. I need to get an argan oil hair mask on the way home. Is CVS even open? That whole girl logic thought stream happened in about 5 seconds. Then I stopped sweating, took a breath, the room's ambient sound returned around me, and I made a choice. At the end of it, I decided to put myself first, simply saying, sorry, I'm not down with that.
Huh? That's a little blunt.
It's not personal. I just don't want to date a man with kids. I want someone I can take vacations with without worrying about anyone else's schedule.
Well, maybe you'd like them, though.
Let me ask you a question. Would you date me if I had 2 sons?
No.
Wow, you answered that fast. Anyway, you seem like a nice guy, sort of, but by not putting proud father of 2 in your profile, you're hiding something. And even though I'm not into kids, there are so many women out there who are. Like, I have one friend just a few years older than me who would love to date a man with kids.
Yeah, well, you're the oldest woman I've ever gone out with.
Ouch. Whatever. You're a year out of a 9-year marriage and you don't know what you want. Why would I date you?
Huh?
I make a lot of money and I'm not ugly. Why would I want to put up with your baggage?
Well, we could always hang out and just see where it goes.
Oh, you mean just fuck? No, thank you. I don't have a problem finding someone to sleep with.
Okay, I guess you're not going to have that second drink.
No, I'm not. But you can walk me out. Oh, also, this is why I don't give out my number. And unmatch. Fun tangentially related anecdote that I'm leaving right here because, well, it's too cringeworthy a story not to put somewhere in this book. I had gone on about 3 dates with a guy. We'll call him, I don't know, Chris Hemsworth. Okay, fine. Let's just call him Chris. He didn't look like Chris Hemsworth, though, so we'll call him Paul. Not as in Walker, as in Giamatti. We'll call him Hot Paul Giamatti. HPG. HPG and I hadn't slept together. We had, made out twice while standing, in case you were curious on logistics. HPG looked like a boyfriend. Nice face, a little bit of softness in his body, definitely not fat. He was funny and carried with him the kind of pain that can only come from feeling less than in the eyes of one's father. He was the kind of guy who, in conversation, you could see was thankful for a woman he could open up to. He was sweet and sensitive, which is why the next part of the story is such a shame. One night, I decided to send HPG a pic of some underboob. No face, this is an amateur hour. Just a picture of my chest with a shirt pulled up enough that you could see some underutter. It was pretty hot. And I'm not gonna lie, I sent it because I wanted to get a reaction. Isn't that what any sexy selfie is about? We want dudes to have a seizure and realize that there has never been a more perfect woman on the planet. We want their dicks to fly off and tears to roll down their faces. Probably because their dicks just flew off. Point is, I was just a girl. Standing in front of a boy, and by boy I mean mirror with my phone in my hand, asking him to love her, i.e. tell her that her body made him want sex with her, that she would only bestow upon him when the right amount of alcohol had been consumed. What he wrote back was not what I expected. He wrote to me, me likey that picture long time. Take a second to say that phrase out loud, as an adult. Let's forget the bastardization of an already overused Full Metal Jacket quote. In my world, me likey comes eerily close to the reaction a toddler has when his mommy asks if he's enjoying his num-nums. I stood there for a minute, and I guess I thought about it too long because shortly another text came rolling in. Hero, why you no like me? With like four E's. And then he added, the cherry on the infantilized jargon sundae, a crying emoji. That was our last text exchange. My girl logic tried to pretend for a mere 0.13 seconds that maybe I could still date him, but my libido had instantly withered when I received those texts, and whatever fantasy I'd been building up about HPG had been crushed by a giant toddler foot. I'm sure not everyone would have reacted how I did. Dirty baby talk isn't my thing, but maybe it's yours. And maybe HPG was a great guy at heart, but in that moment, when I decided to stop texting him, my girl logic was acting on my own best interests. Instead of instilling self-doubt, this time my girl logic was egging me on, telling me to cut and run, reminding me that in the past, whenever people have said dumb or weird things right off the bat, it's been an indicator of what's to come. How can a smart person not apply past lessons to current situations? I decided a long time ago that just because I'm talking to a guy doesn't mean I have to try and make a relationship work, aka settle, if it doesn't feel right, no matter what age I am. I get it. As we grow older, it feels harder and harder to find a man we're remotely interested in. When you do manage to apple bob your way to a decent human, you're so exhausted from trying that your girl logic starts thinking, he's not amazing, but what if he's the last man who will ever want me? I am 33. It's either make it work with him and be 64% happy or die alone wearing wedges and bootcut jeans alone in Valley Village. Guess I can overlook the fact that he says should have ate instead of should have eaten, picks his teeth at the table and always forgets to ask me how my day was. But it's okay that grammar matters to you. It's okay to want someone who doesn't pick his teeth and someone who is communicative. Your girl logic is picking up on the little things that are genuinely important to you because in the end, they're not so little. In the end, they represent bigger things that can have a major impact on your long-term compatibility and happiness. Love and relationships are a fucking minefield of cheap shoes, bad breath, selfish intentions, okay-looking bodies, and weird interpersonal issues. And then there's the second date. Girl logic might get tripped up at times, but at its heart, it knows what will and won't work for you in the long run. Girl logic will eventually remind you of these truths. Could you die alone? Probably. Will you turn 30, shit the bed, and never date again? No. Every time I get out of a serious relationship, I think, I can't believe I have to start all over again. I'll never find a connection as special as that one I had with that guy. And then one day I find myself out with someone wonderful and it all starts again. Seriously, what does having it all even mean? All is subjective. Not every woman's vision of a perfect future looks the same. Not every woman wants kids. Not every woman wants to get married. Not every woman wants a house in the suburbs. Not every woman wants a career. Not every woman is attracted to men in the first place. Why and how did dudes become the key to our perfect future? My friend, a gorgeous doctor, is married with two kids. She appears to have it all. And for her, she does. She has the life that she wants, one that fulfills her. But her fantasy life is not mine. Even if I had the dream husband and all the rest, even if my love life were a 15 on a scale of 1 to 10, if I couldn't get on stage and talk about my experiences, your experiences, and the experience of every woman we know, I wouldn't possess my version of having it all. My friend's life may look enviable because it's traditional. Women haven't been independent long enough for us to totally abandon the ideal of being the trifecta of perfect wife, mother, and career woman while still looking good. But ask yourself, if you couldn't do the thing you love most, would you truly feel complete? If I couldn't express myself and make people laugh for a living, I would crumble inside. So I make sure I can keep doing what I love for as long as I love doing it. Nothing is as important to me, for now. How many women buy into this fantasy that every part of us should be eternally perky and shiny and soft, and that will help us land a man and get our wizened eggs fertilized, and then finally the dream will be realized? Some women achieve that dream and discover it's a nightmare, especially when husbands demand their own brand of perfection. I remember once, during their separation, the asshole husband of one of my close girlfriends said to her, "I'd want to sleep with you if you tan more." Forget the inanity of this statement for a second. It's this type of standard, men wanting you to be something you're not, that's damaged so many women so much. If it wasn't the tan, it would be the weight or the way she spoke or the clothes she wore. I feel bad that he was raised in a world where that sentence could even cross his mind. Update, they've now been divorced for 3 years. She is in her early 40s and her new fiancé is 32. I love this happy ending. In our grandmother's era, perfection meant looking pretty and keeping house. Women had to be good cooks because we weren't supposed to have jobs outside the home. Men wanted a woman who would stay home, vacuum in pearls, and then, after spending all day speaking only to her baby, she'd be expected to make dinner, have a martini ready, and blow him before retiring to her separate bed. No cuddling even? So, at some point, women in the 60s and 70s turned to pharmaceutical helpers like Valium to get through it all. The cooking, the cleaning, the demands, the expectations, the loveless marriages, the requisite blowjobs. Hence the popularity of that Rolling Stones song, Mother's Little Helper. To me, the modern equivalent of Valium is white wine. Over the past several years, women's consumption of white wine has skyrocketed. The archetype of the blue-blooded American wasp and her drink of choice, a symbol of breezy, fun, thinly veiling, and underlying alcohol addiction, has become a mainstay in our pop culture lexicon. Real Housewives drink it on camera, funny girls drink it in comedy and sketches, Cougartown made it a character, Hoda and Kathy Lee chug it to endure morning television. I'm all for getting drunk on a weekend, or a Tuesday night, if I don't have anywhere to be the next day. But the amount of alcohol single women are drinking these days seems a little excessive. And it makes me wonder if we're just using it as a numbing tool to escape the pain of our constant quest for a perfect life. And as a way to beat our own girl logic into submission. I've done it. Everyone does it. You drink to deliberately lower your guard, your standards, your underwear. I've been out with someone I was half attracted to and figured, whatever, we'll get a little fucked up and then kissing him will be fun. The other person, of course, never knows you're dulling your senses to find him attractive. Our girl logic may even turn optimistic. What if I get drunk, we mess around, it turns out fun, and I actually grow to like this hunchback? But maybe part of us is trying to quiet the voice inside us that actually knows what we want and deserve from love. Maybe we're so afraid we won't get it that we just have a drink and go along for the ride with whatever dude happens to be there and take our chances. In college, heavy drinking made us more likely to hook up with guys we wouldn't normally be attracted to. As adults grappling with the realities of age, alcohol can cause us to be more willing to take a chance on men we know, or would know if we were sober enough, aren't what we're looking for. And yes, of course women also drink just for fun because, hey, thin blood vessels feel good flowing through your body and drunk dancing is the best. Alcohol and girl logic don't always mix, though, especially in your 20s, also known as the grossest decade of one's life. Back then, I remember feeling outright ashamed when I'd make eye contact with a hot guy, like I should apologize for not being pretty enough for him. My ideal relationship fantasy then involved traditionally hot men, the hotter the better. And though I never did anything I didn't want to do, being blinded by the fact that an attractive man could desire me did lead me to make some poor romantic choices in my 20s. Really, for much of my life, I was no better than those nerdy, newly rich dorks who develop apps or sell scripts and only date women who resemble wax figurines, perhaps to compensate for never getting laid in high school. This didn't always end well for me. When I moved to LA at 21, I met a guy at the grocery store. Aw, just like in the movies. He had a chiseled jaw and a southern accent, and his name was Jason. We spoke for a bit, and he eventually called over his brother, Riley. Both of them were super hot, just mountains of proportionate muscle and tank tops. The three of us hung out for a few months and did everything together. I preferred Jason over Riley because he was softer, quieter, with less of a creepy vibe. Later that year, this was New Year's Eve 2005, I had to go back to Boston to retrieve some things from school, and I decided to spend New Year's Eve with Michelle. Hanging with her, I noticed that something felt off in my body. Well, turns out I was pregnant. Yep, it was Jason's. I was young and partnerless, not fully rooted yet, and my dreams for my life were far from fulfilled. I was not ready to have a child, and certainly not with this random dude I'd met in an Albertson soup aisle. Hence, I wanted my pregnancy to be, well, gone as soon as possible. It was the holidays, so we couldn't see a non-ER doctor or get to a Planned Parenthood. I was scared, so I called my mom. This woman had paid for my college, sent me around the world, and supported me in moving to Los Angeles. And now I was calling to inform her that there was a good chance I was about to ruin all the hard work we'd put in because I was a sucker for some good old boy with a pretty face. What an ignorant, terrified brat. She wasn't angry, though. She was understanding and warmly pragmatic. When I got back to LA, I called and discovered it was $600 for an abortion at Planned Parenthood. I called Jason and told him what was going on.
"Well, I want you to keep it," he said. "I won't help pay for an abortion."
I was making under $30,000 a year and totally supporting myself, so $600 was a huge chunk to me. I was lucky. My mother gave me the money. I think about that number a lot and how insanely fortunate I was to have a mom who supported me, both emotionally and financially. There are so many women in my position who get pregnant and through lack of resources end up giving birth to a child they can't care for, or worse, hurting themselves trying to get an abortion from someone shady. This is part of why I support Planned Parenthood, because I'm not just a benefactor. I was once a patient. I so badly want to insert a Hair Club for Men joke. Anyway, after I flew home from LA and had the procedure, Jason stopped by the next day to see how I was feeling. For the record, I was feeling fine, and I had nothing to say to him. He told me he was probably moving home to Arkansas, and honestly, I could not have cared less. I did feel stupid, though. I couldn't help being physically attracted to someone pretty, but I definitely let Jason's looks and what I thought his looks meant about me override my better judgment. I was 21 and drunk. I was a fucking moron. My story is just one example of why women's reproductive health options are so important. In my case, it was because all people make mistakes, but young people make more mistakes. Enough years have passed that I'm no longer struck dumb by hotness. In fact, when a super good-looking guy asks me out, I immediately assume he's less smart, makes less money than me, and is otherwise severely flawed. I'm not always wrong about that either. In your early 30s and up, if you're a man who's model hot, you're either already married, famous, or successful. If not, in my book, you sort of failed. I see it on dating apps all the time. These 35-year-old male models have no education, no job, and poor social skills to boot. When you're a white dude with every possible societal advantage at your disposal and you still can't figure your life out, then you're just dumb. And no, glomming onto your friend's fitness brand or throwing social media consultant onto the same resume as anything to do with real estate doesn't count as a career. P.S. To the sole dilettante, genius stunner whose brains have allowed him to pursue pottery, snorkeling, a clothing company, and a medical practice on the side, comedy's about sweeping generalizations. Sorry, don't be a stickler. Another damning element of constantly striving for a perfect fantasy is that we expect perfection, then mock women who fall short of it. If someone gets work done on their face or body and it's great, we'll never know. But if they get it done wrong, even slightly, they end up looking weird. Not bad, necessarily, just they're in the uncanny valley. The uncanny valley is a term used in robotics. I can't believe I'm talking about robotics. When an android or robot is meant to look like a human and comes close, but something is still off enough to make you feel uneasy. How can we stop fruitlessly trying to squeeze our lives into constrictive little Disney princess boxes? How can we stop letting ourselves slowly morph into white wine-addled robots in the name of perfection? Remember that whole having it all thing I mentioned earlier? How my friend's version of all was nowhere near the same as my own? That's true for everything, and honestly, the only person you need to impress is yourself. I know that sounds schmaltzy and is way easier said than done. It's hard to accept yourself, and it's hard when it seems like everyone around you has what you want. But why don't we stop to think that maybe we have what they want? Sometimes your girl logic whispers so many things at once, you become numb. A great example of this is whenever I give myself too much time to get ready to go out. I'm guaranteed to find new imperfections that don't exist, thereby adding more and more layers of crap to my face and ultimately ending up looking uglier in the process. Ladies, give yourself 45 minutes to get ready. Tops. Contouring alone is insane. Why do all of our faces have to look like Picasso's cubist period? Other times, I stop all the fretting and just accept myself out of exhaustion. My girl logic helps me reprioritize and remember what I'm really looking for, and I just stop trying. Not in a bird's nest on my head, no teeth brushing kind of way, but in a I'm enough, I've had enough way. Look in the mirror and concede. Let girl logic's internal chaos hone itself down into the simple, truest version of you. Say, I'm just gonna wear these heels and fucking who cares. You'll go out into the night and you'll realize that all the fretting and self-loathing wasn't worth it because A, no man could possibly know all the effort you put in, and B, everyone else is only paying attention to themselves anyway. In the end, we're all only trying to look good so we can get that one good Instagram picture. And maybe that one perfect husband because he saw your one good Instagram picture. Whatever. Chapter 6. How to Text a Man Without Throwing Your Phone Through a Window. We've already discussed how dating and sex can drive women mad, but no other form of personal interaction can send our girl logic further off the deep end than texting. I mean, is there anything that provokes a more classic girl logic response, obsessing over subtext, daydreaming over future possibilities, and ruminating over yesterday's heartbreaks, than texting? Our parents don't understand this, of course. My mom always says, "Why don't you pick up the phone and call him?" And I'm like, because I'm not a psychopath. Phone calls are for family, doctors, and American Airlines telling you your flight is delayed. Most of us have spent our dating careers poring over texts from guys, analyzing perceived inflection. "He used an ellipsis. Was there something else he wanted to say? Something he wanted me to think? Is he trapped inside his own brain? Is this a diving bell in the butterfly situation? Does he need saving?" We've created stories. "He texted during his lunch because he obviously remembered that I like eating lunch." We've plotted the perfect responses, but only after conducting an informal Gallup poll. 53% of my girlfriends think I should write back K, while 47% believe I should write back OK with a smiley face after exactly 3 hours. Our girl logic kicks in as a self-preservation device, both to help us explain the unexplainable and to bring rationality to something that feels beyond our control. Even when it comes to a simple text, we are factoring in past relationships, current feelings, and our hopes for the guy down the road. Sex, a relationship, or just a timely reply. This stuff is more confusing than ever because my generation of daters has created a world where no one is human. We're all just text boxes floating in space, and it's so damn easy to walk away from someone who appears to be nothing more than binary code with perceived inflection. Guys and girls meet on apps, start flirting over text, and then 3 lines in, they just wander away forever? In real life, you'd never say, "Hey, what are you doing tonight?" asking at like 6 p.m., rude, and then stroll off to follow a butterfly instead of waiting for the answer. But we've created a world of romantic interactions where this is completely normal. We ignore, we ghost, and above all else, we just keep looking for something better. To cope with all the crap, modern women have begun to act, well, like men. Act like we don't give a fuck, like we're chill, like we're into ethical non-monogamy and playing games and waiting fucking forever to respond to a message. Can you blame us? Hell, a lot of guys sign up for dating apps just for the satisfaction of matching with a girl, and then they never bother talking to her. It's just for the hunt. For this reason, we've stopped being honest about how we feel and what we want. We've given in to girl logic when it tells us to play games, wait hours to respond, or act like we have 16 men waiting in the wings on a Friday night. In short, we've started giving back exactly what we started getting. Nothing. Because texting is so nuanced, I figured I'd help you through it. I happen to pride myself on being one of the world's best texters. Not only am I great with inflection and punctuation, I'm also the fastest texter you'll ever meet. Plus, my interest level is obvious. I don't like you, it's clear. If I want something, I say it. Of course, I'd prefer you just guess until I change my mind. I am a woman, after all. This chapter is your very own guide to texting men without losing your mind. I'll show you how to better understand guys, show you when girl logic can be used to your advantage, and explain when it's necessary to turn off girl logic altogether as you attempt to communicate with people who have penises. Basically, I'm going to try and show you how not to feel awful at the end of a text exchange. 5 Modern Male Archetypes and How to Text Them. The following archetypes don't represent all men out there, but most likely do encapsulate a few you've encountered in the wild. Here, I'll explain each man's texting style and what to do and not to do if you're trying to date one of these guys. I'd like to stress that there are lots of nice, normal, wonderful guys out there, but since they are all of the aforementioned superlatives, you don't need a guide for them. 1. The entrepreneur with a good heart, but no brain. This guy is good-looking, but hasn't quite found himself. He might own a t-shirt brand that spreads awareness about inner peace, or a energy drink slash bracelet combo that helps raise money for poor kids in the rainforest. Problem is, while he seems like a philanthropist, only time will tell if he's a successful one. Meanwhile, you have to hear him prattle on endlessly about this one amazing summer he and his best girlfriend backpacked through Honduras. You'll run into him again 10 years later and he'll be married with at least one baby. The wife will be mind-numbingly supportive and either be a stunning Latina or a really average white woman. There is no in-between for men like this. His millionaire dreams will either be realized or he will have moved back to Mariana's hometown to be closer to her family. his texting M.O.
To just reach out, just spreading the love.
He'll send these short missives just to check in, see if you're still responsive. He might even say something as trite as, "What up, pretty lady?"
What to text if you're trying to ask him out?
Creative types like this are a little scattered, so if you're the kind of girl who doesn't want to play a game, be as direct as possible. "Hey, I'm going to rob a bank on Saturday. Want to come?" Offer something a few days ahead of time because he will never be able to get his shit together day of. If he can't find the time and doesn't offer an alternative plan, move on. This guy's a headache.
What to text if you want to blow him off?
Nothing. He'll move on of his own accord because he's so busy donating a portion of his maca gummy snack proceeds to an online eco-fashion show.
Pitfalls to look out for.
Guys like this often seem busy. They aren't trying to be assholes, they're just really consumed with their projects. So he might engage in a conversation for an hour, drop out, and then a day later text you at like 3 p.m. with like, "Hey chica, you loving life today?" Ugh, also he might not wear shoes.
2. Youth pastors, a.k.a. that charming small-town everyman type.
Okay, so these men might not be actual youth pastors because how many of us encounter youth pastors regularly? Basically, these are small-town guys who know everyone, get along with everyone, and find themselves incredibly charming. Often, these guys take society's overwhelmingly positive response to their existence as their cue to get into acting or some kind of public speaking or performing. They are attractive, charismatic, and love to talk. Public speaking, whether you're trying to be funny, commanding, or impactful, is often done for one reason, though. To serve the speaker's ego. Think about it. You have this innate desire to stand in front of strangers and have them listen to you. I should know. In small towns, an audience can be hard to come by, except if you attend a church. Oh, you want to serve the Lord? Well, let's get you an audience. Eventually, some of those guys move to Los Angeles with hopes of turning that passion for public speaking into a less secular endeavor, like acting. Or hosting, which is what actors do when they can't get acting work. Again, I would know. I've done it twice.
His texting M.O.
He's straightforward. If he wants to see if you're around, he'll try to pin down a concrete plan. Nothing nefarious.
What to text if you want to ask him out?
"Hey, you around this week?" This is a good text because it gives him a chance to talk about slash show off all the things he's doing, and he still feels he's in control when he then suggests a plan on a day that works for him. Remember, he's a failed public speaker trying to get famous. He needs to be in control of something in his life.
What to text if you want to blow him off?
Tell him you need to focus on your career. He will understand that, and then he'll tell you he has to do the same.
Pitfalls.
He might have an ego, an ex-wife from when he got small-town married at like 18, and he might be naive to city life. Oh, also, he calls dudes brother, but, you know, he's white.
3. Bad boys.
Look, there's no such thing as a free spirit after the age of 21. Bad boys are just irresponsible adults who behave like children. Maybe they do drugs, maybe they're emotionally unavailable, so hot. But the whole charade becomes a little ridiculous because they're old and they have nothing left to rebel against. Breaking the law. I'm talking about armed robbery, not buying weed. Just makes you a criminal. And tattoos? Not edgy anymore. Most people have them. "Oh, you had a famous tattoo artist do that $500 thing on your bicep? Oh, is it a frying pan? Is it a butterfly with a dick? Oh, you wear a leather jacket and drink and don't always text back? Cool. Guess that makes me a bad boy, too."
His texting M.O.
To see if you're around to fuck. You don't need me to explain this one to you. He doesn't want to hear something cute or funny about your mom visiting. He just wants to fuck.
What to text if you want to ask him out?
If you want to be as casual as him, "You around later?" will always pique his interest. You can't ask if he's around right now because he probably has a day job that he likes to pretend doesn't exist, like managing a barbershop or a Gorin Brothers.
What to text if you want to blow him off?
Nothing. He's a bad boy. He won't care. Even if he does care, it won't matter because he spent so much time trying to look like he doesn't care.
Pitfalls.
He might become a vegetable when he crashes his hog. He might have a thumb ring or bad hair under that beanie he wears in the summer, filthy fingernails. He also, unless blessed with good genetics, might have weird teeth. I don't know why I feel this way.
4. Older but trying.
At some point in your early 20s, you will meet an older guy. He might not be attractive or wealthy, but he's mature. He has manners, a mortgage, and he knows who to call when there's a problem with health insurance. Really, if you met this man when you were older, you wouldn't be impressed. But when you're 23 and he's 35 and he knows who to deal with at the airline, it's hot. I once dated an older guy who would pick me up for our date, pull up to my apartment, and stand outside his car with the doors open. What a move! In hindsight, dude should have come to the door instead of just waiting in the street. Plus, he was driving a truck in LA and he didn't work in the farming industry. Weird choice. Also, that was the guy who later pretended he died, so that explains a lot. But even I couldn't have predicted a death faking to happen. His texting M.O. He is genuinely trying to ask you out. He wants to take you on a date, maybe it's to have sex, maybe he likes you, but still, a date! What to text if you want to ask him out? You won't have to. He will ask you out. Older guys are great like that. What to text if you want to blow him off? Call. Don't text. Older guys just don't text as well as younger women do. His old man fingers won't be able to respond fast enough. These men need a simple, straightforward phone call explaining that you're sorry, but you just have to wash your hair tonight. That's something they'll remember from their youth. Pitfalls. Maybe he has children your age. You'll get glares in public. He's got old man body, old man smell. He might make you watch Fletch. Ooh, and he definitely has a collection of Robert Graham shirts that just won't quit. 5. So hot, you could actually cry. Once in a while, you get a guy so perfect that even on your best day, you wonder if you shouldn't be hobbling along in front of him, periodically bowing down to throw rose petals in his path. Jeans slung low, worn-in leather belt, dog tag-ish necklaces hanging, necklaces you'd like to imagine an old gypsy woman gave him when she cursed him with terrible beauty. Maybe he has long hair, and every time you run your hands through it, you think, ugh, there's no way the man I end up marrying is even gonna have hair, so I better get these pets in now. Maybe he's just jacked, and when he wears a Henley, maybe because you bought him one and threw out his other clothes, he makes you feel like you're living in the Abercrombie out of your youth. Regardless of his particular type of hotness, guys like this are but a fleeting dream for any hyper-motivated or smart woman. Yes, arm candy is fun to flit around with, but at the end of the day, you don't want to hear his songs he plucked out on bass. You don't want to hear his fitness ideas, and he probably watches Ballers or cheers for the Ohio State, and you're like, you didn't even go there. Complex women need complex men. His texting M.O. He wants to ask you out, but he's shy and doesn't give long answers. Don't take his silence as a slight. He's just kind of quiet and or stupid. What to text to ask him out? A guy like this enjoys a direct woman. Ask him to meet for a drink. Remember, he's hot. He's gonna want, like, whiskey or motor oil, so don't take him to a bar with embarrassing drinks and pineapples. What to text if you want to blow him off? Just tell him you have to study. Pitfalls. Might not know current events. Might think he knows current events, but only reads tweets. Will absolutely have an ex-girlfriend who's hotter than you. Don't let him know it bothers you. How to decipher a dude text. Okay, moving on. Now, let's decipher a classic text response from a guy. Let's say you send this message to a new guy you're seeing. Hey, stupid meeting ran late. I'm running 20 minutes behind, but I'm on my way. P.S. I totally moved my thumbs while I was saying that. Okay, variations on a theme. If he writes back, capitalize, okay, exclamation point. It means he doesn't mind and is pumped to see you. No stress, no drama. If he writes back, lowercase, no exclamation point, okay. Don't read into it one moment further. He's a dude, he got the text, end of story. If he writes back, lowercase, k, you might need to worry a little. Both of you know by now that k is the international text sign of passive-aggressive approval. No one doesn't know that k is something you write when you're miffed. If they don't know that, then you need to date someone else because lack of awareness about social practices, especially when it comes to texting, will manifest itself in other annoying ways later. Dude lives under a rock, probably a rock in his parents' house. In sum, he's mildly annoyed you're late, and he half-assedly wants to make you feel bad on your lonely little drive over there. If he writes back, lowercase k, dot, 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 note the ellipsis, because he is a fucking serial killer, do not go to that bar. The subtext of the ellipsis is, it's okay, but not really. It creates unease, and you think he's holding back something, something he should have spit out, or maybe he simply has no idea how to use an ellipsis, and do you really want to date an idiot who doesn't know his punctuation? Bracket, question mark, colon? Rules for text ghosting. Rule 1. You can't ghost if you've been out more than twice in 2 weeks. A bond has been established. You like them enough to have another go. Now you're more than strangers. You owe them a text.
Rule 2.
You can't ghost if you slept with the person and it wasn't the first night you met. One-night stands are exempt. One-night stands are as much a part of dating as guns are part of American culture. It's impossible to separate the two, despite all the downsides.
Rule 3.
You can't ghost if you're in the middle of an actual discussion via text. Have the social decency to at least end the conversation. Don't be a weirdo. All else is fair. Not cool, but fair.
The ghosting grace period.
If you go out once and you aren't into him, ghosting in the first 24 hours should be considered your grace period. If a guy disappears only to text a girl 3 days later, then he's just rude and obviously doesn't think you're that great. Guys, listen to me. If you like a girl, it behooves you to text her the next day to say, "That was fun. Let's hang this weekend." Unless you're the president, you have time. And if you don't,
"Hey, that was fun. I'm busy this weekend, but when are you free again?"
is perfect. Hopefully that's not how you sound.
How to text a hookup gone awry.
Once upon a time, I dated this guy. We went out maybe 5 times over the course of a few weeks. By this point, we were texting every day. I thought it would be fun if he came to Las Vegas with me for a show I had. When I asked him and told him what weekend, he said, "Sounds fun," but never gave me a concrete yay or nay. In fact, he outright disappeared. Actually, he went camping. He said, "I'm going camping." And I said, "Oh, fun. Where?" And that was it. I guess what he meant was, "I'm going camping literally right now." He resurfaced a few days later, but it was too late. I was already in Vegas, and I was already irritated by his flakiness. If you ever find yourself in a similar situation, dealing with someone you're actually dating but who refuses to give you a straight-up answer about plans, your girl logic might start going haywire. You might be tempted to play it cool, to mess with him. You might start having fears that if you don't respond in a sweet enough way, you'll scare him off. And what if he was the one? You can't let your girl logic triggered fears consume you. You need to tell your girl logic to shut up and realize that what you really want is someone who doesn't act like this. Here are a few options of what I could have texted back to him. "Help! I'm in a Clark County prison and they've taken my shoelaces." "Hey, I'm already in Vegas under someone else right now. Snooze you lose, dork." "You made it weird, dude. If you're not into this, no problem." The last one is actually what I texted him. I wanted to make it clear that he acted in an unattractive way and also give him an out. Sometimes men's eyes have to be open to their selfish behavior. A threat that you will walk away makes them step up or step out.
How to handle an out-of-nowhere reconnection text.
I went on 2 dates with this guy once, and he was okay. I couldn't tell if I was attracted to him, but he was nice enough. Not that great-looking, but somehow he should have been. You know, one of those people that has all the right features, but they just aren't working together properly. Good teeth, nice skin, good hair, good cheekbones, but, like, it still feels off. There's that uncanny valley again. But we've all felt it, and in those situations, you almost get frustrated asking yourself, why am I not attracted to this objectively attractive person? The worst is when you decide he isn't cute enough for you, and then he starts dating a cool pretty girl, and you're like, wow, maybe I missed something. Anyway, point is, I wasn't magnetically attracted to him. Then we both went out of town, didn't communicate, which was fine, because again, uncanny valley. What wasn't fine was when he texted me a month later, asking if I wanted to hang out again. Sometimes a lag can mean the guy's actually busy with work or family crisis or a near-death experience, but in this case, I got the impression he was sitting on the toilet, scrolling through his messages, noticed our old chain, and was like, "Oh yeah, her." It made me feel super special. Since I was already erring on the side of meh, I never wrote back. I'm convinced I wasn't the only girl he toilet texted that day. So if you find yourself going on a few dates with someone, only to not hear from him again for a month or two, here are your options.
Number 1, ignore.
Listen to me on this. Nothing on this earth, not "I love you," not an orgasm, not perfectly peeling off an entire nail's worth of nail polish, nothing feels better than the gratification that only grows over the hours when you resist texting someone back. It's like you can feel him squirming with anticipation. It gives you power! Power! Number 2. Actually, there is no option 2. If you have even the slightest relationship with someone and he doesn't have the respect to let you know it's over, don't waste your time building up his ego. Leave him be, look for other options, and do not cut your own hair.
When and how to dump a man via text.
Now, on to the much maligned text breakup. It's controversial, and I try not to do it unless it's deeply well-deserved. Occasionally, it is. If you found out your new boyfriend, like of a month or less, is cheating on you, still entangled with an ex, or is otherwise just a raging garbage fire who doesn't warrant a proper face-to-face or telephone conversation, maybe he keeps like posting gym pics and hashtagging it with gains, ZZZ. Or if for whatever reason you're livid or you're over it, if he's done something to really screw you over, send him a dump text saying something short and sweet.
I've been thinking about it and I don't want to see you anymore. Bye.
Should suffice. Or if you have irrefutable evidence that he is a bad person and you're feeling especially strong-willed, you can always text, I know what you did. Drop the mic and never pick it back up. Also, a fried shrimp emoji I found is often enough to confuse a man away from you forever.
How to text the guy you actually want to keep.
When you really like someone, it can be scary. Especially as a modern woman having gone through the crazy emotional ringer most of us have suffered through in the name of dating. So when you find a man who's actually cool and thoughtful and smart and shows up for you, God knows you really want to keep him around, your girl logic might tell you to try harder.
I baked your lunch into a pie!
Or be nonchalant.
I accidentally called you the wrong name and farted, whatevs.
But it's important to wear your heart on your sleeve. You need to let your guard down if you're ever going to let someone in. Everything in our society tells us, don't let a man know you want a relationship.
They are afraid.
But ask yourself, do you want a guy who doesn't want to be with you? No. And there are plenty of normal men who do want relationships. So stop catering to what you think men want and just be honest. Like, you want a boyfriend, right? But you want the right one, not just a scarecrow in Air Maxes. So write, I would like to date someone exclusively, but only if it's the right person. For now, I'm having fun meeting people and seeing what's out there. Something like this puts no pressure on him and lets him know you can just be as chill as him. If he acts like a tool because you've said the word exclusively and he heard it out of context, that's his problem. Of course, if you're already convinced this is the guy for you and you don't want to see what's out there, you might start internally freaking out, imagining your future kids, deciding who goes where for holidays. That's fine, but you cannot tell him you're thinking about any of this shit. Play it cool until you know for sure you're on the same page.
I'm having a great time with you and I'm excited to see where this goes.
Or some such. Don't rush anything and maintain a normal pace. Feel it out. And most importantly, don't be the first to look crazy. Chapter 7. Sorry, I can't hear you over how single you are. Some women might be single because they're too demanding. Some are not super attractive, or they're rude. They might be too busy for a real relationship or have unrealistic expectations. I should know. I'm one of those. I once had a boyfriend say to me, I'm sorry I'm not the perfect version of a man you invented in your head. And I retorted, not as sorry as I am. Now hand me that pizza. Get out of my tub. Kidding. I was in the shower. But he was right. Girl logic makes love difficult because there are so many types of men we can imagine ourselves with. Oh, you just want someone who will listen to you and love you for you? Then you get that, and you just want some dumb gorilla who will fuck you and be your arm candy. Then you want someone funny. Then you want a quiet smart guy. Then back to the gorilla. Oops, he slipped on a banana. Not so tough anymore. Our girl logic clings to the past while racing toward the future. I've been single and caught myself crying out, I just want a boyfriend, while chomping on a Charleston chew and watching Frasier. Then, when I started dating someone, I'd find myself thinking, wow, I really miss traipsing about Silver Lake and making out with hot, emotionally unavailable guys with three roommates. That was fun. I need to go to Vegas. It's Monday. Let's do shots. This is great if you just want to date forever and you plan on drinking enough virgin blood to stay youthful. But eventually, you grow up. You get tired. There are plenty of other women who are single only because they have standards. By the way, your standards are too high is someone's subtle way of saying that you want someone that brings more to the table than you are bringing yourself. There's no such thing as too high if you're exceptional. You think anyone ever told Leonardo DiCaprio his standards were too high? It gets weirder when you're a successful unmarried woman in entertainment. Your love life is considered public business, and your fans and reporters don't even pretend to give a shit how you feel about your new project or your latest castmates. Nope, all they really want to know is why you're single. You could be hanging off a cliff, one arm orangutan above your head, holding on by the third finger on your left hand, but before saving you, the fireman would demand to know why you're not wearing a ring. We write books, hold hours-long conversations, and devote magazine columns to the loaded conundrum of women who are single. Now what? Top activities to try when you're single. Ways to bond with your pet but not seem weird. Single and ready to eat ham? Here's a guide. Apparently, singlehood is a terrible disease you should be very, very ashamed of. Everyone feels entitled to prod you about your singleness until they've conclusively determined what's wrong in an effort to reassure themselves that they'll never catch your death stench of aloneness. Like you're going to break down crying and confess, "Okay, I'm single because I eat my couch cushions and make horse noises during sex." Newsflash, men don't deal with this. There is no Esquire article, "You're single, bro, now what?" Because the answer would always be, "Now I can go back to jerking off whenever I want, hashtag sandwich." In fact, to research my claim, I Googled Esquire and single, and what came up was an article called "Why It's Great You're Single." And yes, this happens to me too, not the couch cushion and horse noise thing. I'm talking about the questioning. I've been in meetings where men think it's okay to ask, "So, are you single? When was your last relationship?" I'm stunned every time, especially when the interrogator is a married man. I'm like, "Oh, I bet your wife would find this line of questioning super relevant." And the older you get, the worse it is. Nobel Prize, huh? But who are you going to share it with? Have you tried sciencemeet.com? No one asks a 22-year-old why she's single, right? This isn't 1930. No one asks a 22-year-old why she's single, right? This isn't Alabama. It's not 1930. For lots of us, your 20s are expendable for figuring yourself out enough to start tackling the hard work of your 30s. In your 20s, you can say stupid shit and date with abandon and be bad at your job, switch careers, move cities 5 times, get bangs, grow them out, get them again 3 years later. You can even try a clip-in nose ring. Point is, it's your time to mess around and not be judged. And if someone does judge you, your go-to is, "I'm 25. I just Googled electoral college." Keep in mind, there is a difference between how are you still single and why are you still single. The former is a compliment, as in, "Wow, you're so amazing. How has someone not begged you to marry them?" But "why are you single" feels like an accusation. What the hell is wrong with you that you couldn't just pick someone who wasn't right for you and make it work? That's what adults do! Sorry, I guess. Someone once posited that very idea to me on a popular podcast. "You dated all these guys and you couldn't make it work with any of them?" As if there's a finite and predetermined amount of men a woman will ever have to work with. Like the universe says, "We're gonna send you a jealous alcoholic, a pretty boy with no marketable skills, and a handful of other mediocre ways to settle. These will be your only options for eternity, so figure it out." When you're single, you take great comfort in other single women for one simple reason. They feel your pain. Sure, it's easy to commiserate about the assholes who don't text back, but admit it, sometimes, deep down, you find yourself thinking, "I have no idea why I'm still alone, but her, on the other hand, she has some issues." I try not to heed my own girl logic, though, when it attempts to make me think petty thoughts about my friends. I've always been the kind of person who is happy for others' happiness. Weddings, relationships, whatever, I've never felt other people's relationship status affected my own. Until I was 33 and went through a period where I was dating and dating and dating to no avail, as every guy around me seemed to find a new and unique way to be terrible. With age, the more we grow and figure out what we will and won't stand for. So it stings even more when you find yourself being continually rejected. You've put in so much goddamn time and effort to becoming this amazing version of you. When a man seems to fault you for this, it can feel like an affront to the entire life you've created for yourself. Also worth noting is that some women, like some men, are single because, well, they're kind of annoying. Does this mean they don't deserve love? No, it just means they shouldn't procreate. But you're not a bad person if you look at certain women who complain about their singledom and think, "Yeah, but you talk exclusively in a baby voice and you think wearing a shirt that says diva is cute." Truthfully, the fact that her love life is ever even considered a factor when assessing a woman's character is antiquated, insulting, and irrelevant. So you're not a mom. Does that mean you hate children? So you're divorced. Does that mean you have no idea how to be in a relationship? So you don't have a boyfriend right this second. Does that mean you're a used up piece of fuck gristle? No. And yet, wherever we are in our love lives, whatever instantaneous snapshot people take of us, that's how we're judged. And what's worse, we internalize those judgments. One of the main cultural messages we constantly get is that single women somehow aren't to be trusted. We're either sad sack man-haters who eat our feelings, or we're threats who act like rogue spies and hang out at frequent flyer lounges to steal your man. Exhibit A. A few years ago, my mother got the opportunity to teach an art class on a cruise ship. It was a great gig because she would teach one watercolor class a day, and for that, she and a guest, me, got to do a 2-week luxury cruise for free. There was a couple there around her age, late 50s, early 60s. The husband was a bubbly, lovely man who loved to joke around with my